Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and Tiffany Faison is here in Studio 2.
Hi.
Welcome back to you.
Thank you. Always great to be here.
It's great to have you here. We've got a tough one, and it sounds like we should just jump right into
I prefer to just get into this.
Okay, so there's a lawsuit.
Yep.
It was reported last week in the Boston Globe. Mm-hmm. It involves a real estate developer, Robert Weintraub, who invested $100,000 each in Sweet Cheeks and Orfano.
Mm-hmm.
So for listeners, as reported in the Globe, the key claims: one, in 2017, you took out a loan of $1.5 million to buy out your partner in Sweet Cheeks, kept 100% of that ownership stake for yourself instead of sharing it with investors after using funds from Sweet Cheeks to pay off the loan. Two, that you weren't transparent in how you used about $6.5 million in federal pandemic relief funds, that you may have overpaid yourself or employees with close personal ties. And I'll note, the reporting says that the suit provides no documentation to support that accusation. Okay, so you brought us that the statement that you submitted to the Boston Globe when they were researching that article.
Sure.
So I'm going to take a sip of water because I can actually hear my mouth on the air. So 1 second here.
Okay.
Sorry, folks, live radio, and I'm going to read the statement that you brought.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. This complaint is disappointing but not surprising, as I have been dealing with the misogynistic and bullying tactics of Mr. Weintraub and his close friend and business associate for the last 13 years. The assertions in this complaint are not only misleading and false, but written with such color as to attract attention from well-meaning press and the public. The clear intention is to damage my character. Further, my private conversations with Mr. Weintraub over the years are in stark contrast to the allegations he has made in this complaint under the penalties of perjury. I will not cower to the intimidation intended to scare me into submission and silence. My career is built on hard work, tenacity, and the refusal to compromise my standards of integrity, both personally and professionally. I look forward to the truth of my dealings with Mr. Weintraub and the details of my relationship with my business partners, both past and present, coming to light through this litigation. Again, to be clear, I emphatically deny the derogatory allegations in Mr. Weintraub's complaint and will defend myself through the appropriate channels. Do I have any facts that have come out of my mouth incorrect in terms of what was reported and what I just read in this statement?
I mean, factually, it's completely inaccurate that I have misused any of those funds. We have reported everything back to the government. We've been, all of our PPP and RRF has been approved. We gave money back to the government that we didn't use. A lot of people found ways to kind of use it in various ways. We didn't return money that we didn't use. I did take out a loan to buy my former business partner out of Sweet Cheeks. My former business partner was an officer at the company at the time, and he was on the loan and approved how the loan, not on the loan, but he approved how the loan went down. I paid the loan back entirely with interest that was above market at the time. In my private conversations with Mr. Weintraub, he said I would have done exactly the same thing, Tiff.
So a clarifying question on the federal money. You're saying that you complied with the use requirements and all reporting requirements.
Correct.
With that federal money.
Yeah. Also in the suit, it's wild. It's like what this is, it's all factually inaccurate, and then it's kind of how I feel about it. There was a time I would have been really kind of worked up about this, and, you know, I take it seriously, obviously, but it's so factually inaccurate that there's how I feel about it is very different because I know what this is intended to do versus what the facts are. For instance, one of the things it says that I paid my family money and my ex-wife. My ex-wife and I separated both personally and professionally before the word pandemic was even in our lives.
It was 2019.
2019.
You say in your statement to the Boston Globe, you refer to Weintraub's close friend and business associate. Why did you cite that individual in your statement?
Oh, I just think it's endemic to the type of treatment that's happened over the course of the last 10 years.
Is that person involved in the lawsuit?
I don't know.
Okay. And you accuse Mr. Weintraub of misogyny and bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us any examples or tell me why you're using those words?
I think that's something that'll come out as we continue down this road. I've spoken out about a lot of stuff, and I'm often asked if there are consequences and penalties to that I feel in my life. and then I'll just let that go.
Okay. What's the next step in the litigation process?
Just all the normal court stuff. Like, obviously, we respond to the complaint, which we're doing right now, and we do it in a formal way. And then, you know, there's just a lot of really, frankly, like, you know, rote court things that go back and forth in terms of filings. So,
okay. One last question for you. You've spoken in the past about the importance to you of transparency in your financials. You gave a quote to the Boston Globe about that actually in 2019. So to reiterate, for you, what is transparency in your books and your financial practices? How do you practice that today?
We do practice it, and we have annual reports that we submit to our investors, and to we also submit them to the government. We are open with our team about our P&Ls and where the money goes. And
for our listeners, that's a profit and loss statement.
Profit and loss statements, exactly. So we're very open about it, and we've, you know, reported everything we needed to back to the government, and everything has been approved. So, yeah, this is I can't imagine the intentions behind this, but I can tell you that the facts around the financial mismanagement are absolutely inaccurate.
How many investors do you have?
Depends on the restaurant. So there's a good amount of them, and 99% of them have been incredibly supportive.
So, like, just literally, I'm trying to understand order of magnitude, like 5, 25, some.
Each business has its own investment structure. So, Orfano had around 12.
Okay. All right. And Orfano has closed.
Correct.
Okay.
Which is also something we disclose to our investors when they decide to invest with us. Yeah.
But the restaurants that have closed, the restaurants that have not closed, how many investors that you have?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
We have celebrity chef and restaurant owner Tiffany Faison here in Studio 2. We talked when the first season came out. In fact, it was because of you that I began watching the show
Bear.
The Bear. And in fact, we have a corner down here in WBUR where people tend to run into each other.
Yep.
And I have an overwhelming urge now to yell corner every time I come around it.
That's one of the funniest things about The Bear, that everyone is saying corner everywhere they go. There are times that you just become so ensconced in this culture. I still say behind you to people in the grocery store. They have no idea. Like, they probably think I'm being gross. And it's like, no, I'm just telling you that I'm behind you. I don't need to do that.
So again, for listeners, and behind you, I still do from my waitressing days too, in a restaurant, when you're walking behind someone else, especially if you were there carrying food, to make sure of situational awareness, you tell them behind you.
Yes.
I did say that to someone the other day, totally creeped them out. They were like, you are an inappropriate woman.
It sounds inappropriate if you don't have context for it. But
right.
And anytime you're coming around a blind corner, you say corner so that someone doesn't come the other way with a tray of drinks or something else and have a giant accident.
Exactly. So The Bear is a show on Hulu that has just dropped its second season. It's about a chef who comes back from very fancy pants restaurant life in the world to take over a sandwich shop that his brother, who passed away, leaves to him.
Yep.
I don't know if we're going to do any spoiling, but I'll give spoiler alerts just in case.
I'm only on episode 3.
Oh, I'm ahead of you.
Ah,
all right. I'll try not to spoil. So what are you making of the second season so far?
I love that every character is getting its time. I love that Sydney is getting time. I'm really interested in seeing her journey. And I love Io. I think she's just like, she stole the first season for me, so I'm really happy to see.
So I want to stay there for a second, because Io Edebiri is a Dorchester
She's
native,
a Dorchester.
27 years
person,
old,
exactly.
Rising star, born and raised here. Have you met Io yet?
I haven't. No, I would love to.
Yeah. And does she look on the show like she really knows how to cook?
I don't think there's been enough. No, I don't think that's important, frankly. I think they're doing a great job.
Yeah.
There's this scene, and again, I'm only 3 episodes in, but there's this scene. I relate to both her and I'm forgetting the pastry chef's name.
Marcus is the character
when he's in Copenhagen. And they're both having different moments, right? Like, he's sort of earlier in his career where the world is opening up to him and he's seeing it through a different lens, which is like all the things that food can be and mean, and how a city looks different, Copenhagen looks different, and how, you know, his relationship with his mom and the whole world is looking different through the lens of learning this craft and really falling in love with it. So I'm watching that happen, which is kind of earlier than Sydney's experience. And Sydney has this great vignette in the last episode that I watched about, like, this pasta dish or ravioli dish, and she's eating dumplings and she's eating pierogi, and she's going through this idea, and you can see the dish kind of forming in her head in a thousand different ways, that they're doing this really beautiful, almost like, you know, Netflix-y, you know, beautiful version of. And then you see her cook it for the first time, and it's awful. And that moment of who I want to be versus where I'm at, and it doesn't match up, is so it's so interesting for a chef, and I think it takes a really good chef to recognize that. So I've watched a lot of people grow up and be like, oh, this is amazing. It's like, no, it's not yet. And to have that delta and trying to figure out how to get from where you are to where you want to be. And I hope that's a lot of what's going to happen with her this season.
So Marcus is played by Lionel Boyce, by the way. And one of my favorite little moments, and if you've seen that, I don't think I'm giving it away, that Robert Townsend shows up as her father. Mm-hmm. I just love that.
Yeah.
I just love that cameo by Robert Townsend. In fact, one of the things this season is known for are these wonderful cameos by all these established actors.
Yes.
Who show up.
Which, I don't know, I don't love that.
Oh, I do. Sorry.
I don't. No, it's fine, and I get that people do. I think there's something about this for me that feels. I know it's a giant television show, and I know that people are watching along with us. It's like when I was a teenager, and like I would fall in love with a band, and if someone else loved the band, it became less mine. It's like I'm holding it that close, where it's like I don't want all these crazy cameos. I want it to stay as close to not being. Celebritized as that's not a word, I realize that, but like, do you know what I mean? I want it to kind of stay insular and
you know
sweet.
You're a celebrity,
no,
right?
No, I don't actually, but like, do you know what I mean? I want it to kind of stay this little
cottage
thing that we can hold and relate to.
So check out The Bear. Be sure to watch season one before season two. We're here with Tiffany Faison. So I'm gonna do Dealer's Choice for you, because mm-hmm. there's two other things that we could talk about and we probably won't get to both.
What do we got?
So we can either do climate and food,
mm-hmm.
or we can do the end of Pride Month.
I'm always going to choose the end of Pride because it is the end of Pride Month. And so, you know, for me, Pride is obviously 12 months out of the year. But I think it is really important to address Pride going the last couple days of Pride Month.
So okay, so note to that. Selves, climate and food, we'll pick it up again next
Let's
time.
Let's do it.
So end of Pride Month first. Favorite moment for you in Pride Month this year?
We had an after party at Tenderoni's after the Pride night at Fenway, and that was really lovely. People just like dancing in the dining room and having a great time. But I also think I've seen drag queens on a lot of sports fields this year. And so whether or not we had anything to do with that is inconsequential, but the fact that there's more visibility and there's more acceptance and that there's been more openness and I'm more celebration in that way. I'm really, really happy to see that.
You threw out the first pitch at Pride Night at Fenway Park last year. Mm-hmm. You brought some drag queens with you who were close friends of yours. You received terrible pushback on
social
media.
We were the first drag queens to be on a major, like a professional sports field. So, yeah.
So in our last couple of minutes, we've talked here on the air this month about the push and pull of mm-hmm. Pride. You know, lots of celebrations, lots of progress, and lots of pushback.
Sure.
From, you know, aggressive acts by people in Target stores mm-hmm. Responding to Target displays.
Yeah.
Pushback to Budweiser for its social media campaign
yep.
featuring a trans celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
So as we close Pride Month with that push and pull in mind,
mm-hmm.
sort of what's your take about the state of where we are?
My take of the state about the state of where we are is to pay attention to what's happening and how people are navigating their companies. Because we're at a moment of inflection where companies are being forced to choose a little bit. And when they're not choosing the LGBTQ community, they're choosing against us. And so no matter how many rainbows they're slapping on their logos or whatever it might be, pay attention to that. I watched the CEO of Budweiser yesterday on CBS Morning Show, and he couldn't really answer anything. There were no real answers. So, and they've supported us in the past, but the answer was, we'll support any politician that supports us. And that's, you know, that's so transactional. And for me, human rights are not transactional. That's not something that you cower with whatever way the wind blows. That's not how it works for me. So I think it is really important to kind of take note of the people that have stood by us really ardently. Also, shout out to Boston Pride for the People for taking over this year and really changing the rules and how we did Pride this year. It went off without a hitch. Super celebratory, but like the organizational part of it was also just spectacular. They put all of like the corporate entities in the back and let all of our organizations really march first. It was lovely to see. I'm so happy and proud of them.
Tiffany Faison, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.